How do you build a high-performance team? That's the question that all leaders grapple with. The challenge in today's environment is that you're told to pull this off on a shoestring budget and that you have to exceed previous year's production. It's an impossible task. Here's how this show helps. Every week, we're going to feature executive and senior leaders from HR, IT, and sales, and they're going to share their best practices and playbooks so you can empower your managers to build great teams. We are Engaging Leadership, and now, here's the show. Thanks for joining us today. This is your friendly neighborhood talent strategist, Dr. Jim. Every organization is dealing with immense pressure to produce. In fact, many organizations are obsessed with the short term, and so much so that they don't really look beyond the month or the quarter in terms of the direction that they're going. If we agree that this theory is largely true, what implications does that short-term thinking hold for an organization's people strategy? How do you lead with generosity and empathy when many corporate cultures don't walk the talk when it comes to their people strategy and too much of an emphasis on short-term results? These are the questions that we're going to tackle today in our conversation. And it's a good thing that we have Federico Demarin here to help us with the discussion. So let me give you a little bit of background on his story. So he's currently the Chief People Officer at Group M. Federico is a business executive with over 25 years of experience in the people function. He's worked for renowned global companies throughout his career, such as Reuters, Swarovski, Duty Free. He's had wide-ranging roles that has scope at the local, regional, and global levels. In his current role, he's the Chief People Officer with the largest media advertising company in the world with 40,000 employees worldwide. Federico, excited to have you on the show.
Thank you for the invitation, Jim. Happy to be here.
Really looking forward to this conversation, and I think you're going to bring a lot to the table in terms of your particular perspective. I think before we dive into the conversation, I know I covered some of the backstory of your career, but what I'd like you to do is take a few minutes to walk us through some of the things that you feel are relevant for the listeners to know about you that's going to inform this discussion that we're going to have.
If I have to describe my journey in the HR people function with all its transformations, because the function has changed a lot also in the last 25 years, I would say that I studied business administration. So that kind of sets the mindset in terms of how I see the function. Basically, I went through local, sub-regional, and global roles trying to see the whole landscape of the people function. So going through the different practices as well as different scopes, different industries, because I've always been curious in terms to see how things work in companies that are publicly traded companies, privately held companies, more entrepreneurial. So I see the people function as a great place to see how companies operate. And that has been my journey, who's taken me through living in different countries and seeing many different cultures.
When you look at your career trajectory and especially your global perspective, how does that inform some of the key things that you're tackling from a people strategy perspective? What did that offer you that somebody that might have only worked in the US context might be missing in terms of how their people strategy needs to be formulated?
When you see the world and the way things work out in different industries, different companies, different countries, one thing you clearly understand is there are very few black and white. You always need to question when someone says, this is the way to do this, this is the way to do that. So I think when you have that questioning, which comes also with curiosity, authentic curiosity to say, okay, let's see how this could work differently. You start appreciating the fun and the value of working on a strategy.
When you're dealing with an environment where there's very few black and white topics, what were some of the things that you did that helped you navigate all of those gray spaces and do it successfully?
I think basically when teaching people is one of the things I've done in my career to help me gain perspective. When you have to teach other people, you reflect harder on what you're saying, because obviously you may be talking about something like leadership development or performance management, but you understand not even the most renowned guru in the world in history can say, this is the way I say it, the way I do it is the right way, and every other way is not. So as a teacher, it humbles you. It makes you research. It makes you show different perspective of things. And as you practice that with new students, and I've always asked them, and this is MBA students, I've always asked them, please criticize. Be selfish in a good way saying whatever you're listening, whatever you're hearing from me or your peers is not the absolute truth. So test it against your own reality and see what the difference are, because that's the best way to really understand something and then bring it to your own realm and build a strategy around it.
So when you look at that teacher's philosophy and you apply it to the classroom setting, and then you extend that out into the world of work, how does that show up in how you actually lead people and guide people?
So when it comes to speaking to people in other functions, or even in your own team, in HR or in the people function, you always put things in perspective. You always share things as an opinion, as alternatives. You ask many questions. So the coaching formation helps a lot. It's not, it helps you. It teaches you to ask questions and to drive a conversation, but not to make statements about how things are or how they should be. So to me, that's also very important when you're bringing an idea to a team or bringing an idea to your business partners. You present it as, this is an alternative. You show where that idea is coming from. So research, what kind of best practices behind it, but you don't say this is the way to do it, right? So that to me is my perspective, and it has worked very well in terms of getting people on board to support it, understanding that everything you do is a try. There's no absolute truth about those things.
That's really good insight. And I especially like your comment about everything is a try. Now, you're a pretty senior person within the people leadership space. Now, if you take all of those principles that you just talked about, and you're advising a first-time manager on how they need to show up in their first role as a people leader, or maybe they're pretty junior in the people leadership function, how should that impact their response and their processing of information when they're confronted with some challenge that their people are bringing to them? What's your advice in that sort of scenario?
When you're starting, you usually feel like you need to have all the answers and you need to have them quickly. So you need to control that impulse of jumping into the topics because you need to prove yourself. And you know, that phrase that, you know, fake it until you make it, I think it's a great example. People, you try to do that because you don't want anybody to think that you don't know what you're talking about. The smartest people that I've met and I've worked with, they're always, those are the ones that usually reflect on things. They take their time. They said, let me think about this. There's some information I need to consider. So you don't need to jump on something right away. If you're surprised by the topic, that's what you can do. If it's something that it's coming, so like a meeting or discussion, definitely try to inform yourself first in whatever you're saying, even if it comes from whatever guru, whatever consultant firm, always put it as, this is information that can help us. And the value that you're bringing is actually bringing insights that come from research and not necessarily from yourself. So you remove yourself from the equation of this is valuable or not. You're a vehicle, you're an expert that brings information into the conversation. And that will help you position yourself as an expert. I think it's not about having the right answer, because if you say this is the way, I can guarantee you, if there's 10 people, you're gonna hear 9 other ways and everyone feels that's the right way.
I really like your advice about removing yourself from the equation. And when I think about it, it ties into what's one of the primary responsibilities of leadership. If you're doing it right, your job is to serve your people. And if you're constantly putting yourself at the center of the thing, you're getting in your own way of that ultimate responsibility, which is serving your people. So I think that's really well taken advice. One of the things that I'm curious about, you've had quite a bit of time in the people leadership space, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of leadership gurus and HR gurus have their theories out there. Having seen what you've seen, what's sort of the HR or leadership myth that you just wish would go away?
Definitely the most important one is something that I mentioned during our conversation is, you need to be the only one with the answers. If you're a leader, people come to you for answers. So you need to have them. But I think that's an old way of seeing leadership. I think leadership is about having the responsibility to have people come up with their answers. You provide a framework, you provide examples, you mentor people, you put ideas on the table, but you should not put it as this is the answer, because then what you're creating is clones. People that would repeat what you say, and then nobody will ever innovate if they do what you say. Because in this field, as much as in any other, innovation is a constant. So you need people that can challenge what you're saying and say, I see this differently. I see this in this other way, or we could do it in this other way that is better.
So I like your emphasis on creating an innovation culture that is rooted in challenging the prevailing wisdom. I'm paraphrasing what you said. If that's the goal, what are the things from a blocking and tackling perspective that a leader needs to be doing to create that sort of environment? And I totally agree with your point that the idea that the leader has to have all the answers is old-time thinking. So if we're building that innovation culture, how do you set up the environment so that people are comfortable in challenging and questioning what is considered prevailing wisdom?
One of the most strategic things you have to do as a leader is to select the people that work with you. Normally, leaders face this decision, right? Is it experience? Is it potential? Do I recruit for skills, technical skills, what is traditionally said as soft skills, but emotional intelligence? Those things basically make the difference. So I think if you want to generate an environment where people can challenge and innovate in a healthy way, you need to see this in people. So what are the behaviors these people should show will bring this kind of environment into a company? Of course, you need to get things done, but not every role is like that, and there are different percentages. So experience is always necessary, but you should really ask yourself, in which role I need people that are able to think, that are able to question, that are able to manage a conversation in a positive discussion about things and feeling comfortable that maybe it's not their opinion that the one that will move forward, but we're all building this together. So I think recruitment is fundamental as a leader to generate this space. And secondly, your own behaviors. So you recruit the people, but if you behave as every time someone says something that doesn't go along with what you're saying, you start defending yourself or you start attacking other people, that's not going to happen. It's important that your behaviors always show this openness to listen. This, how do you reward the people that contribute and how do you incorporate their feedback into your own conversation so other people may feel encouraged to do it?
So I like the broader point that you're bringing up in terms of how leaders need to be modeling what behavior looks like. And certainly, how do you respond to things that are being brought up? How do you respond to questions that are being asked or challenges that come up. And you talk about leaders can't respond to those sort of things by shutting things down too early. So when you look at that, how do you build that muscle within yourself as a leader so you aren't cutting things off too quickly? You're resisting the urge to jump in too soon. What were some of the things that you did earlier in your career that set you up for success when it comes to that?
That's a complex answer. I think the most important is to understand that your career wasn't built by yourself alone, right? So I got to where I got because of the contribution of many people, including all the leaders that I had, my colleagues, the people I interacted with. So you need to understand that as a leader, that you're not the only source of development, the only source of innovation that it's going to be there. So you need to open that space. One of the things that helped me a lot was to work on emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence, I think, is a critical skill because it helps you control yourself first and some of the urges that you feel when you're in a conversation, especially someone saying something that goes against your own opinion. So how do I keep myself open? How do I manage my urge to defend myself? Because it's human, right? It's your own ego saying you need to defend yourself. You're under attack, right? It's very primitive, but it works. So it's always at work. So you need to be aware of that. So how do you connect with your own body? How do you connect with your body temperature? How you're listening and how do you stop listening? So I think emotional intelligence, and I got certified in two different methodologies just to learn because I was very curious. If I'm going to have to teach or help other people to develop this, I need to definitely do it on myself first. And I think that helps build the muscle. Now, the theory, which is how do you learn emotional intelligence, goes along with the practice. So you're going to have safe spaces to practice this until you build the muscle and the skin to manage these opinions that go against what you're saying. And the other thing is, I think is there's a lot of materials about long-term leadership versus short-term leadership. And I think this is definitely one of the things that you need to always keep in mind when you're creating a culture of innovation and when you're accepting all these people's opinions. It's probably not short-term because it's always faster to do whatever you want in the way you want it as a leader. That's the short run. It's a shortcut for everything. But it's mid-term or long-term. It's not the best for your organization and it's not the best for the people that you're leading. So a leader with the right balance of short-term and long-term is the one that manages to achieve the patience to open the space, understanding that it's going to be, it's a longer road versus the do what I say.
Wow, it's been a great conversation so far. Make sure you join the HR Impact community where we gather a community of HR leaders just like you. This is a space where top people leaders share actionable insights and practical playbooks. Sign up today as a member for the community. Get updates on the latest HR resources and exclusive event invites. You can join the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And now, back to the show. What you said about striking the balance between short-term, mid-term, and long-term, the leaders that do that well are the ones that really set themselves up for success when it comes to building a high-performance team. I actually opened the conversation with that, or with a version of that. My question to you is, we know what, in general, a lot of organizations look like. They're obsessed with the short-term. And you, as a people leader, can get sucked into that short-term thinking. So when you think about creating that balance that positions you for success, what were some of the things that you did that allowed you to balance all of those things together as you were building your teams?
Companies today, they need to be obsessed with their financials because it's critical for the existence of the company. So the short term will never go away. Understanding that companies are not magical entities. They're made out of people. And those people are the leaders of the organization. And as a people leader, I see you have two critical areas of responsibility. One is to remind those leaders that there's a mid and a long term. So in terms of strategy, when it comes to people and the decisions they make focused on financials and short term, you need to remind them what are the consequences, what are the pieces that will move and how would they move if they focus on that short term only road. So that's one thing. And you need to speak up. You need to find the place. You need to find the time and the way to talk to the CEO, to talk to your colleagues, to help them understand the consequences. Number two, you're going to have a people strategy in place that involves many things to do. And many of those things are people oriented and they're mid and long term. When the urges comes, I've seen a lot of leaders that basically drop their strategies and said, oh, we cannot do potential assessments or succession planning because we need to achieve this cost saving. So let's just postpone it. But very few actually question, do we really need to postpone it? Or are these two things that can work in parallel? Is it really that you cannot do all these other things that are more people oriented, connected to our mid and long-term strategy because we have this short-term thing we need to achieve? And it's so black and white, financially driven, these other things, they're not going to have a space. And I think this is something as a people leader, as an HR leader, that you need to fight against.
Your advice is great. When you're talking about the need for HR leaders and people leaders to speak up to make sure the appropriate perspective is paid attention to, that makes sense. The issue that I have is, and we almost see it almost every other week at this point, where senior executives or the C-suite seems so disconnected from like the actual frontline impact of what's going on that their messaging and their action seem like they have no sort of consideration for what happens below them. So I guess when you're thinking about your advice of, hey, people leaders need to speak up, they need to make sure that they're being heard, they need to make sure that they're advocating for what the rank and file are experiencing, how do you pull that off when executives might not even really be that concerned?
This is definitely one of the challenges of being the leader of the HR function. I think it's your role and responsibility to make sure that those voices are heard. There are many ways to get that. And of course, having the right team in place in the HR function is critical because those are the ones that are in the trenches, listening to people, listening to their complaints. It's not like the business leaders don't do that with their own teams. I've worked with many business leaders that are very close. And I think you need to have those individuals in the markets, in the different areas and different functions that have the trust, the confidence, and the courage to bring those opinions to you in the people function or to you as a leader. And sometimes as an HR leader, you need to have those spaces with those individuals on a one-on-one so they feel comfortable and safe to bring that feedback into the larger conversation. And if they're not able to, you need to find a way to make it happen. Because at the end, I think it's a critical responsibility for the leader in the HR function.
I want to take this a little bit further. And a lot of what we're talking about right now is in and around the area of managing up. If you're making the case that line level leaders and people leaders in HR need to speak up and be better advocates, how do you create the space for those sort of conversations with the senior executive team and the executive team so they're actually connecting the dots to what's happening at the front line? What are some of the things that you would recommend that people leaders do on a consistent basis so there isn't a disconnect between the executive suite and the ground floor?
I think executive team building is a very important thing to do. Sometimes it is neglected. Executive teams need to operate as a team. And as a high-performing team, they need to build spaces for trust. They need to have spaces for open conversation where you can put the fish on the table. And it's not about fighting. It's not about resources always. It's also about talking of a strategic element of the equation, not just the short term. If it's always about the short term, it will always prevail. So make sure that your meetings and the time you spend with your executive colleagues is also about those other things. How do we act? How do we make space? How do I feel if I'm being shut down? And are the others aware that I feel that way? Now, you need to have a very close relationship with your CEO, which it should be your boss or your CFO. If you're in a smaller company, you're reporting to a CFO. You need to be close to those individuals so they know how you feel and they know it's their responsibility also to facilitate that space and that role. So team building is definitely one. Second, how do you interject your one-on-ones with those executives so you can have, they can have the trust to share some of the things, and you need to hold that trust. You need to be loyal to what they're saying. They need to be able to know that they can have a private conversation about their feelings or their opinions, and you're not just going to share it 5 minutes after in a coffee. It's something you need to build and you need to put it in your radar. If I have it, great. How am I using it? And if I don't have it, how can I build this trust credit with my colleagues so I can use it when I need it?
One of the things that I liked about what you just mentioned was creating the space within the one-on-ones that you have with your executive team to talk about some of those bigger picture items. When you look at making sure that doesn't get ignored, what are the things that you've seen work well in the past that make sure that those longer term and midterm strategic initiatives and priorities get the attention that they deserve? How did you weave that into your one-on-one so it's a consistent area of focus?
When you're doing a one-on-one, either with an executive, your boss, or with the executive team, and you should always come up with a checklist of what things you're going to discuss. That checklist should have a balance, because if you're leading the function, if you're leading HR, that means you need to have a focus that goes beyond short-term. So if all the topics that are on that list are short-term, then you're missing something. So that's one thing. Check that list. Look at it. Which one of these topics is actually strategic? So it's mid and long-term. And how do I bring the mid and the long-term into the conversation when I'm presenting these things? And this needs to be every interaction. You cannot do it once a year, right? So when you have this one-on-ones, you need to make sure you present yourself as a strategic partner, not just a problem solver short-term. If everything is about solving a problem or an issue that is in your hands right now, managers get used to it. And you may do it fantastically, but then when strategic elements comes up, you may not be in the picture.
I really like how you frame that. And actually, the reverse could apply too. If you're finding yourself in an environment where there's an always a focus on the long-term and mid-term and really not much of a focus on tactical execution, you can shift the direction so that it's consistently focused on those things so you can take the strategy and put it into action. Federico, real good stuff here. And I appreciate you hanging out with us and sharing with us your insights. So when you think back to this conversation that we've been having about striking the appropriate balance between the short-term, mid-term, and long-term, what's your advice to the listeners as far as the things that they need to pay attention to and they need to implement so that is a consistent topic of conversation between them and the executive team?
I think I would start with, first, do you have a clearly simple strategy that you have communicated, or is it just a document in some folder? Has it been implemented? Has it been discussed? Do you have followers? That strategy needs to be connected, obviously, with the business, with the vision of the company, but also with your own purpose. And I think as an individual, if you're a leader in the people function, you need to have that clear. If you haven't worked on that, would be a great suggestion. Start defining, what is it? What's my purpose? What do I do? What I do? What drives my energy, my enthusiasm? Because when you talk about mid and long term, you need to have something bigger than just a goal, than, you know, implementing a system or changing a process. So to me, that's one thing. Second is, how are you building your strategic persona as a leader, as a people leader? How do you bring in strategy into the conversation with your leaders? And for that, you need to work on, where's your information coming from? Where's your expertise coming from? Do you have research on your side? Do you have things you can show when you need it? You don't start with that, but you need to have it ready. You need to know what you're talking about. Then how do you present yourself? We talked about not being the wise ass that knows everything, and this is the way and this is the wrong way. You need to be able to back it up. Data and research is very important. And last, I would say your relationships. How do you relate to your organization? You talked about advocacy. How are you connected with the rest of the organization so you can bring their voices into the table? How are you connected with your CEO, your boss? And how are you connected with your executive colleagues? And how do you build this team spirit where people are able to share their opinions and their true opinions, not the I agree, yes, sir kind of opinion, the true opinions, and feel safe about it so you can together innovate and discuss the important things, not just the short-term firefighting.
Awesome stuff, Federico. If people want to continue the conversation with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
I think the best way is LinkedIn. If you try to find me on LinkedIn, you'll find all the information that you need about my profile. You can write to me. I see messages from many different people I've worked with, and I've been a teacher in university. So I try to be active on LinkedIn, connecting with those individuals and helping whatever I have a chance.
We'll include your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. So really appreciate you hanging out with us. When I think about the conversation that we've had, there's three big things that stand out that I think it's worth calling out. One of the things that you mentioned early on in the conversation is that there's few black and white things in people leadership. And I think that's important for any manager or people leader to keep in front of them and be aware of. Especially frontline managers who often, when they get promoted into those roles, want to create an organization in their own image. That's not the job. Your job is to develop other leaders that can actually replace you so that you get to the next level. So it's really important for you to understand that there's not one pathway to the truth, and you need to create space so that everybody else is figuring out answers and delivering them in an innovating way. The other thing that stands out about this conversation is that you have to build the discipline to speak up as a people leader. In that way, you are making sure that the executives and senior leaders of the organization are connecting what's actually happening at the front line. So from an HR perspective, in a lot of ways, you're the advocate for the front line of the organization and making sure that both sides of that equation, the executive suite and the front lines, are deeply connected in terms of strategy and execution. And that only happens if you're regularly speaking up. And then the last thing that stands out about this conversation is that if you're looking at it at things from a people leadership perspective, you've got to remove yourself from the equation in order to successfully develop a leaderful organization. If you're centering yourself in the middle of all the things that are happening, you're really going to create an environment where you're just building a team of people that will only offer insights that they know that you'll agree with. And that's never really going to move the needle in terms of building that high-performance team. So really solid stuff, Federico. I appreciate you sharing all of that stuff. For those of you who have been listening to the conversation, if you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a review. If you haven't already done so, make sure you join the HR Impact community. You can find that at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And then tune in next time where we will have another leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that they had that helped them build a high-performing team. Thanks for listening to this episode of Engaging Leadership. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find our community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time where we'll have another leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.